Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing Podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This was published on the 4th of April 2022 and is entitled Long Links. Welcome to another Long Links, selected pointers to long-form pieces that have added value to my semi-retired days, and one or two of which might reward you if you make time for them. A few of this month's pieces aren't free. It's a bitter fact that the truth is paywalled, but the lies are free. Sorry. Let's start with climate issues, which I'm cheerful enough to think might be at the center of the world's attention, were it not for COVID and Mr. Putin. One of my favorite environmentalists is Tsipora Berman, who's been fighting the good fights, and winning a few, for decades. She writes, "Fear and Loathing in the Climate Era, Thoughts on How We Win." 8 thoughts on how we win. It's cheerful, practical, and wise. There's a certain faction of people who claim to share reasonable concerns about the onrushing climate catastrophe, but scoff at us hippies always going on about renewables because, they say, nuclear is what we really need. I can't suppress a suspicion that it's because there's something manly about nuclear power, except for it's way, way, way too expensive. The nukies reply that future technologies will fix that, the most plausible of which is small modular reactors, everyone says SMRs. The Economist dives deep in, developers of small modular reactors hope their time has come. I'd be wide open to them if they turn out to be affordable and deliverable. Per this article, they're not obviously hopeless, but they're nowhere near a slam dunk. While we're on the carbon trail, my former employer now offers this new customer carbon footprint tool. The idea is that if you're doing cloud computing, you might still want to know how much you're worsening the planet's carbon load. This is supposed to do that. Haven't tried it myself. It's a big deal, because for a lot of big enterprises who don't actually bend metal or refine fluids, their IT might be where their carbon load is concentrated. A little bird told me that when, back in 2019, Amazon decided to sign the Climate Pledge and to try to be a better climate citizen, one input was customers beating up on AWS leadership saying, "I need to know my carbon load, and that's you." Tip of the hat to AWS. Speaking of not wasting energy, here's another chance to expose the dangerous lunacy that is the cryptocurrency world. And absolutely nobody is better than Amy Castor. Read, "The Gorilla in the Room, Yuga Labs Investors Pretend to Care About the Planet." They don't. And you'll probably find yourself agreeing with me about Amy. Her blog is reliably excellent on this stuff. Let's dip into politics. Conservative politics. Regular readers know that I'm pretty far out on the left wing, but I make a point of trying to track the other side because I actually think we need intelligent conservatives. And that's a link to an earlier blog piece, actually from 2012, which is 12 years ago, 10 years ago. Which are and have been mostly absent in North America, I mean intelligent conservatives. But things are getting weird. There is starting to be a conservative faction saying that our business-dominated civic fabric is doing a really bad job of building a decent society, that monopoly is a problem, and working-class impoverishment and exploitive healthcare economics, which is perfectly sensible. What's weird is that this is often coupled with religious absolutism, activism against any sexual expression which is not straight out of the 50s, and regular flirtation with racism, all packaged up under the banner of being anti-woke. I personally think that anyone inveighing against wokeness probably has their head up their ass, but like I say, there are also voices saying interesting things. Like, for example, "Only the Economic Left Can Beat the Woke" by David Reif. Ignore that woke in the title and give it a try. It's intelligent, well-written, and yes, wrong in places, but it feels like someone you could talk to, unlike anything out of today's conservative Trumpist mainstream. Soundbites. To put it brutally, you can't fight a culture war when you never have really cared, been interested in culture before. And the mainstream right simply doesn't have the intellectual tools to fight a battle of ideas. Well, when someone rants about the awfulness of the woke, you can bet that pretty soon they're going to be inveighing against cancel culture. Most such rhetoric is slimy, unserious partisanship, the hyper-privileged whining that they can no longer get away with being arrogantly offensive pricks in public. Can we conclude, therefore, that the whole cluster of issues is a nothing burger? I'd say, yeah, mostly. But damn, it's a hard subject to talk about. Ken White offers, "Our fundamental right to shame and shun the New York Times, what the NYT cancel culture editorial got wrong and what it got right." I don't agree with all of it, but it's careful and made me think about some things I hadn't thought before. Outtake. Similarly, if you denounce cancel culture without citing specific examples and suggesting how people should act differently, you're closer to chilling speech than fixing it. Anyhow, recommended. Writing this piece led me to a pleasant surprise. I was going to recommend a few pieces by Chris Arnade, that's a link, on the basis that even conservatives can write smart, eloquent, important things. I don't know how I got the idea that he's one of those, because he isn't, that's a link to an interview with him. Anyhow, what he's up to recently is going places and walking around them, taking pictures and notes. For example, Kyiv, and Lima, as in Peru. He also writes things that aren't pure travel narratives. For example, Among the Half-Masked, COVID Theater is a sign of a healthy society. Really good stuff, and he's writing stuff all the time. A good guy to follow. Okay, let's retreat to the comfortable left side of the road for a heartfelt JWZ rant. Following the money. There are few places in the world more likely than San Francisco to drive thoughtful people to righteous rage. This is a fine piece of that. Famous non-conservatives include Albert Einstein, who, in 1949, wrote Why Socialism? From which, here's a link, this nice little excerpt with a link to the whole piece. Okay, enough politics. Let's talk food and address this question. Does adding pasta water really make a difference? Well, it turns out it does, and also it's a fun piece. And don't say I don't add value for my readers. This month's musical long link is R.L. Burnside's Come On In, that's a link, which popped up in a random blues fan stream I follow, and oh my goodness, it's a keeper. Although Wikipedia says RL did some innovating on this one, to me it just sounds like pure, minimal, warm-toned, and warm-hearted electric blues, and that's something that the world always needs more of. I'm going to end up on a geeky note, so those of you who are tech-hostile or tech-oblivious can drop out now, and my feelings won't be hurt. Baby's first AWS deployment, that's a link, is the story of a first-timer building a little app on AWS from scratch. The author eventually decides to walk away from AWS for reasons that obviously don't apply to everyone, but I found instructive, and you might too. Let's close with what I think could become a very, very big story. It's from The Information, a publication which is paywalled and expensive, but you can see the first couple of paragraphs of, here's a link, Amazon's public shareholders show their hand. It contains lots of juicy insider information that I won't reproduce here, but I think the following is very significant. This is a block quote. As of February, Bezos had the right to vote just 12.7% of Amazon stock, including shares held owned by his ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott. A decade ago, Bezos could vote 19.5%. Back in 98, shortly after Amazon went public, he owned 41%. Perhaps just as meaningful, this year the combined stakes of two big institutional holders, Vanguard and BlackRock, is almost equal to his. And remember, Amazon doesn't have a class of supervising shares guaranteeing its founder control regardless of his ownership, unlike firms such as Alphabet and Facebook. What this means is that power at Amazon is gradually shifting to public shareholders. End of quote. So big tech was distinguished throughout my career by having founding leadership still setting its directions, which in most cases meant a focus on customer success that is not exactly a usual feature of 21st century capitalism. Okay, yeah, I know Larry Ellison, but still. If that changes, if big tech becomes just another arena for financial engineers to maximize their extractive power, it'll be a whole lot less fun. And by the way, an even more attractive target for legislators and regulators, which is a good thing. Well, I suppose it had to happen eventually. That's all, folks.